The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Before we begin today's final oral argument of the year also marks the final oral argument for two of our colleagues. Ohio's constitutional age restrictions make it impossible for Justice Paul Pfeiffer and Justice Judy Lanzinger to continue in their present positions after December 31st, 2016. Justice Pfeiffer began his service on the Ohio Supreme Court on January 2nd, 1993, while Justice Lanzinger began her service on the Supreme Court January 1st, 2005. Thank you both for your combined 36 years of dedicated service on the Supreme Court bench. Your impact on the state's jurisprudence will resonate long after you hang up your robes. You and the depth of your institutional knowledge will be sorely missed. We have said farewell to several colleagues over the years, and it doesn't get any easier. I wish you both well in your retirement. However, I know that neither of you will give anyone the ability to use the word retirement when describing the next phase of your lives. On behalf of my colleagues and the Supreme Court staff, thank you, and we wish you all the best.
Well, Chief, since our mics are hot here, you've given us the opportunity. I wouldn't call it a bittersweet moment. I think it's a sweet moment, certainly for me, and Justice Lanzinger can speak for herself on this. I would just say to my colleagues and to the lawyers in attendance and all those who may look in on it this sometime, we were discussing last night at dinner how lawyers frequently ask, is oral argument important? And we're surprised by that because it is so important to us. It's part of what makes this job interesting and fun because we don't know what questions are going to come from our colleagues. We're sitting here looking for cues as to what that means, as to how they might think about a case, and learning from each other, and certainly learning from the great lawyers that advocate in front of us. So it's been a great privilege. I've been privileged to, I was going to count up how many different people I've served with. I never got that done. It's not a large number. But as someone who wrote about the United States Supreme Court, every time you change out a member of the United States Supreme Court, and certainly our court, the dynamics of the institution change because different people have different approaches. So it's never gotten dull. It's interesting, and oral argument, for all of you lawyers who have an opportunity to do that, is one of the most interesting and stimulating parts of serving in this position. It's been a great privilege, a great honor, and I've enjoyed the company of great colleagues over a quarter of a century. Judy.
Right. It's not over yet. We have till December 31st. So, but I echo everything that Justice Pfeiffer said. I first of all want to thank all the wonderful lawyers that we've had in front of us. I can say over the last 12 years, some of the best lawyers in the state have engaged in the to and fro, the questions and answers that made it very important to understand the case in front of us, as well as the impact that our decision would have on future cases. And as you know, we have pending cases now that we will be completing over the next few months, so we will be working. And I have to say that as a judge for 31 years, this is the most splendid venue that I've worked in, and it's been a joy and a delight to work with all my colleagues over the years, and particularly the bench that I'm on now. So we're very grateful and very grateful to be in the best job in the state of Ohio.
So let's go to work.
Absolutely. We'll start with our first case, 2015-163, State Ex-Rel James Cordell versus Pallet Companies Incorporated and Industrial Commission of Ohio. For the appellants, Mr. Spillace.
Good morning. May it please the Chief Justice, members of the court, Mr. Gould. On behalf of the appellant in this case, Pallet Companies, Inc., myself and Kristen Hignett represent the appellant. Today, you're presented a case involving, it's a workers' compensation case involving the issue of voluntary abandonment. And that issue precisely is whether or not a worker who is injured, who tests positive for an illegal substance after that injury and is terminated thereafter pursuant to a company policy, whether that individual is entitled to the payment of temporary total compensation, or whether or not defense of voluntary abandonment can be made, which would deny a temporary total compensation to that
individual. Is there any indication that the worker injured was would have tested positive at the time of the accident, the injury?
The only evidence in the file is that he tested positive shortly thereafter.
So shortly thereafter?
I think within hours after the. I'm not precisely sure, but Mr. Cordell was tested at the hospital when he was sent there. He was sent by, I believe, ambulance. It was a pretty serious accident. So the test was, I think, within hours of the. I'll go back and look at the file just to document that. I don't have that answer right for you. The issue becomes, and the reason why this court is hearing this case is to decide whether or not a case that this court decided in 2007, referred to as Gross 2, whether that case is dispositive of the facts here in this case. And in Gross 2 was a case involving the defense of voluntary abandonment. And in that case, this court indicated the voluntary abandonment would be applied only in post-injury circumstances in which the claimant, by his or her own volition, severed the causal connection between the injury and loss of earnings that justified his or her temporary total benefits. The court said, what we state is dicta, that the doctrine, that is the voluntary abandonment doctrine, has never been applied to pre-injury conduct or conduct contemporaneous with the injury. And that's the issue here today. I forgot I'm going to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. So I apologize for not doing that. I'll keep track of my time. So the issue involved in this case is whether or not pre-injury conduct, that is, in this case, Mr. Cordell's voluntary taking of an illegal substance, whether or not that conduct would sustain a voluntary abandonment defense. We believe that the Court of Appeals was in error in that it held in a bright-line decision that in every instance of pre-injury conduct, which results in the firing or termination of employment of an injured worker, that would bar an employer from asserting the voluntary abandonment defense. Now, the facts are not in dispute, or else I don't know precisely when Mr. Cordell was tested, but there was no dispute that he tested positive for marijuana shortly after this injury. There's no dispute that my client had a rule in place which indicated that if he tested positive for any illegal substance, he was subject to termination.
The counsel, it is also not in dispute, and you would probably argue it's irrelevant, but the substance abuse was not a factor in the injury accident.
There's no evidence the level of cannabinoids in his blood had anything to do with his accident. Rather, because he was a victim of an unfortunate accident, he was in a tow motor and loading a truck. The truck pulled away, so he had to jump, and he fell and fractured his ankle. So there's no indication that the level of his cannabinoids in his blood had anything to do with his injury. But the claim was recognized, and that's the one thing I don't think the Court of Appeals appreciated. Claim was certified. It's a state fund claim. It's not a self-insured claim. Claim was certified, but the issue of compensation came up where my client raised the issue of voluntary abandonment based on on the fact that he was terminated for his intention, for an intentional act. The intentional act being taking an illegal substance in knowing violation of the company policy. The Industrial Commission of Ohio, which very rarely hears cases, a three-member commission heard this case itself and found a distinction between this case and Gross 2, whereas the Industrial Commission found that because the activity occurred, the illegal act occurred before the accident, Gross 2 did not apply. Court of Appeals obviously disagreed, which is why we're here today.
So, Counsel, if we can stay on that point for a moment, talk about that. You know, in Gross, the situation was he had put water in a fryer, and so that was the violation. It was also the act that caused the accident, because the fryer exploded, and that was the injury.
Correct.
Here, aren't we talking about something very different?
We are.
Where the only reason that the act, the illegal, I guess, or the violating act and the injury are combined is the drug testing. So can you talk about that a little bit more to distinguish this case from Gross?
Certainly, Your Honor. And as I was going to say, if we look at the Gross case, I quoted one portion of it, but the other portion is paragraph 23 that this court relied upon. It says, an underlying principle, however, is that if an employee's departure from the workplace is causally related to his injury, it is not voluntary and should not preclude the employee's eligibility for TT. So that's your point, where the distinction is, I think, evident that in this case, the violative act had nothing, it was not causally related to the injury. In Gross 2, the violative act caused the injury. And in other cases this court has cited, the violative act, such as a truck driver driving drunk and who lost his insurance, it's that act itself, the act of the injury, which this court indicated could not be used to support a voluntary abandonment defense.
Well, counsel, as I think through this, Gross and the young man who violated the absolute instructions, never, never, ever do this because it can lead to disastrous results as it did. That was severely criticized when it first came out. Maybe still is.
I'm with you there. Yes,
all right. You're really not, because I was in the majority, as I recall.
I believe so.
but it seems odd to me to be dealing with this argument of saying you can't get compensation if your violation of a work rule didn't have anything to do with your injury. But you can get compensation if you did something stupid that you knew you weren't supposed to do and you got injured. You can get compensation. That seems upside down to me.
Well, I would agree with you in some respects, Your Honor. And the distinction is, what makes this case somewhat difficult from our perspective is that the Gross 2 case wasn't decided on the basis of when the type of conduct, whether it was before the accident. The court focused on the fact that this is a no-fault system. So someone, a young man like Mr. Gross, who, like any teenager, wouldn't pay attention to what was told to him and was hurt because he wasn't following the rules, that affected the no-fault, this court found, that affected the no-fault nature of the system. So that the court found that because this is a no-fault system, it's unfair to deny someone benefits because the act, the stupid act, mischievous act, caused the injury. We don't have that here. And so that's why we believe that this court should revisit Gross. Now, we're not advocating to you today that you reverse Gross, not at all. But what we're advocating is that you take a look at Gross and precisely that sentence I read from dicta and decide that pre-injury conduct can be the basis of a sustainable voluntary abandonment defense. Now, we're not saying
Counsel, if I may, I'd like to hear that argument a little more carefully, because I'm reading from the Court of Appeals, and they specifically rejected that argument.
They did.
And I guess since we are here really to talk about policy.
Right. Well,
let me just see if you and I agree on policy. The employer obviously can terminate someone for smoking marijuana.
Correct.
For or during the shift, right? They have that right. Nobody's contesting
yes.
that
yes.
right.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean they weren't injured, does it?
Does not mean that. No.
So how do we, from a policy standpoint, take, as you say, a foolish act and say, well, you're injured, but the no-fault system is not going to be available to you because you're stupid?
Well, the distinction I would draw, Justice O'Neill, in this case, is this Mr. Cordell, it wasn't a negligent act or a stupid act. It was an intentional act. It was, and it was illegal.
We're grown-ups here. It was stupid.
Well, stupid and illegal.
Smoking marijuana, working on heavy machinery, that's stupid.
Correct. So then
that's what the workers' compensation system is there to protect, isn't it?
It's there to protect injuries that occur in the course of arising out of employment, but not injuries that arise from an intentional act. But the argument, I agree with you that this injury had nothing to do with his level of intoxication. However, in this case, the issue is whether or not, from a policy standpoint, my client has a drug-free workplace policy, and that is laudable, and it makes sense. It not only protects their co-employees, but also members of the public. So from a policy standpoint, Does my client have to pay temporary total compensation after an individual like Mr. Cordell is fired for intentionally violating a work rule? Now, contrast that with somebody...
So answer that question. Should they?
They should not. They should not. Now...
Why?
Because his act severs. His intentional act. He knew that...
I'm agreeing with you. He's fired. He's fired.
He's done.
But he's still injured.
He's still injured. So this act deprives him, like every other act. I think you need to go back to the voluntary abandonment cases from almost 30 years ago. In every one of those cases, that person was injured. In every one of those cases, that person could not go back to their former position of employment. No doubt about it. But in those cases, Ashcraft, McCoy, all the other cases this court has decided, this court has said that it's okay, that you've severed the tie between your injury and your loss of earnings. Your loss of earnings is due to your violation of the company policy. So those are post-injury, in most cases, not all, post-injury acts. In this case, the violative act occurred before the injury. So why would you, I don't want to say reward, but why would you compensate somebody who really had no business being on the job that day because he knew he was in violation of the company policy?
But counsel, the expansion of the voluntary abandonment seems to be of concern here. The only reason that your client, or the only reason the company knew of the situation was because of the injury, correct?
It was discovered,
and
yes.
And so the discovery of it really is connected to the injury itself.
It was discovered only because of the injury, I would agree with you, but it was not causally related to the injury like the Gross case and these other cases that have been decided. I've exhausted my time. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
But that's the problem, as Justice O'Neill's pointing out, the idea of the workers' comp being enshrined in our Constitution and saying, you know, we're going to have a situation that's going to cover these injuries regardless of the activity of the employee.
I agree. But as I indicated to Justice O'Neill, this voluntary abandonment, it's not new, and it applies to other cases where conduct, violative conduct, severs the tie between the injury and loss of earnings. Here, it's no different. It's just the activity, the intentional wrongdoing, so to speak, occurred before the injury. So why should that make a difference if that same individual who might have tested positive for marijuana after the injury, maybe when he was on light duty, and he's terminated. Remember that this is temporary total compensation. It does not provide, it does not permanently preclude an injured worker from ever receiving temporary total again.
Does this also obtain in alcohol-related cases where people have been terminated for voluntarily coming to work in an intoxicated state?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are there cases that you have on that?
Not precisely on intoxication, alcohol intoxication. We cited State X. Rel. McCoy, which had a companion case, BrandGuard, and in that case, which preceded all of this, there was a positive test, I believe, for cocaine, which resulted in a finding of voluntary abandonment. That preceded all this, and that's a case that that the court did not take a look at in Gross 2. That's a case that the Court of Appeals did not look at. But in those cases, and I'm sorry, I don't have a precise case dealing with intoxication, but the same concept. Why can't, if an employee is injured and tests positive if he's found to be legally drunk, but we can't link the intoxication to the cause of the injury, why should that person be entitled to the payment of temporary total compensation?
Wouldn't that affect the employer's contribution to the fund?
Yes, it would. If it's a state fund claim like my client, then any compensation or benefits would go into the determination of what their premiums are.
So the result could be that intoxicated individuals who come to work and repeatedly or fall into some injury are never terminated and are always compensated, and the employer is paying into a fund for people who shouldn't be working.
Well, that would be similarly in this case, if an intoxicated individual is injured and can't prove the proximate cause between the intoxication and the injury, and that person is terminated, according to the Court of Appeals, that person, despite, again, showing up to work drunk, knowing he's violating the rules, would be entitled to temporary total compensation. And we don't believe that's correct. We would ask you to revisit the Gross 2 decision and find these facts are not applicable, find in favor of the employer, and deny the writ of mandamus. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Craig Gould, and I represent Mr. Cordell in this case. You know, this injury, he was driving a tow motor, and he was in the back of either on a trailer or a semi. And the driver of the semi took off, and my client fell with the tow motor. So it was a pretty bad injury. No evidence that the marijuana that was in his system had any effect. He was doing his job. There was no one saying that he was impaired, glassy eyes, slurred speech, things like that.
The employer concedes that.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct.
So that's not in dispute.
No, it's not in dispute. But what I want this court to be aware of is how severe this injury was. You know, he was doing his job. They wouldn't have found out about the violation if he wouldn't have been hurt. And the Court of Appeals addressed that. I mean, you know, it's not as though he got off scot-free here. He got injured, still struggling with these injuries. I mean, he's had five other conditions. The bone has not healed properly, as you can see from the allowed conditions.
So, counsel, besides the future earnings, the temporary total disability, what is he entitled to? What's undisputed that he's entitled to right now?
He's entitled to medical benefits, always future treatment, as long as the BWC and the IC approve it.
Right.
I believe he's entitled to a permanent partial award, but in terms of his lost earnings, he's not entitled to temporary total.
Okay. You have no quarrel with the fact that he will no longer be working for this company?
None whatsoever.
So he was fired and legitimately fired because of the just because of the presence. It's a strict liability. You have presence of marijuana in your system. You're gone. There's no argument with that.
No argument.
And his medical benefits are going to be paid, or have been paid, and will continue to be paid.
That's
are not
correct.
Affected by his use of the marijuana.
That's correct.
So we're just arguing about what he should have, or what his future earnings that he will lose as a benefit or as a result of being impaired and that's unable to work.
That's
for
correct.
Whatever period of time we're talking about, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
In Chief Justice, let's assume for argument's sake that James died. Now his family are not going to get death benefits because they're going to argue that he voluntarily abandoned his position of employment. I mean, this is a slippery slope.
So what you want to say basically is, like in Gross, there has to be a causal connection between the activity of the employee and the injury.
Yes.
They have to, and that's, I mean, obviously Gross 2, I did not agree with Gross 2 at all. It was very fact specific.
Yes.
That young man had continuously been warned about the activity, and he willfully, in my mind, chose to mix water with hot oil and cause an explosion in the kitchen and injure himself and coworkers. And that's the result we had in Gross 1, and then we revisited it, and Gross 2 is the result. But there is one thing you need to take away from that case is that there has to be a relationship between the injury and the activity.
Yes.
But, counsel, is that really what you want, is Gross 2? I was affirmed in Gross 2, so I'm okay with it. But, you know, there, is that really the test that we want to come away from this case with? That's what I'm primarily concerned with. I mean, this is one of the most difficult issues that I've ever faced as a judge or a justice. So I would love to have this opportunity to really create a nice, clear test. And is Gross the test, which is very fact-specific, or is what you really want something like Writer Stucco that says, if you are injured before the violation, then you don't have the capacity to abandon your employment. And if we say the violation was the discovery of the presence of the drug, that's your disconnect. So help me come up with a test that we can use.
I think the Gross 2 test is the test to use, because if you do what the appellants want you to do, which is you reverse Gross 2, you're also reversing Writer Stucco, Pretty Products.
Well, in his defense, he said refine, revisit.
Revisit. But I think if you revisit, because then, you know, it's going to lead to employers coming up with bogus reasons to fire people. Well, look, you know, they did this, you know, right before they were injured, so we're going to fire them, so they're not entitled to temporary total. I believe the law is in Gross 2, which has been in place for almost 10 years now, is what this court should stand by, because it would get rid of Pretty Products, Writer Stucco, and all the other precedent from this court, which says if the time that you're injured and, I'm sorry, if you are injured and then fired, as long as you're injured and you can't go back to your former job, you're entitled to compensation.
Why would we have that when we have Revised Code 412354 that sets up a rebuttable presumption under certain circumstances, but those circumstances don't exist here?
Well, they don't exist because he wasn't under the influence. This is a work rule violation, because if you look at it just, don't look at this as a drug case. Look at this as any other work rule infraction. And, you know, the OmniSource case talked about that. You know, it applies to all work rule violations. You know, so don't look at it as we're compensating this guy because he does drugs. Look at it as just any other violation, because if you do that, then you're going to penalize the people simply because they had some marijuana that, you know, probably in the future is not going to be legal or it's not going to be illegal in this state, but it didn't cause the accident. It's just a work rule violation. There's work rule violations every day. As Justice Pfeiffer said in his dissent, I mean, this is going to be a slippery slope. And then in his concurrence in Gross 2, you know, there are people that, you know, as the justice says, stupid decisions every day, you know, and if they do these, you know, poor decisions and make these poor decisions, and this court comes out and says, well, you've severed the causal connection, they're not going to get compensation.
Counsel,
are you taking
away
a tool, though, from the employers to keep their workplaces safe?
No, none whatsoever, because if, in this case, Mr. Cordell was under the influence, the claim would have been denied. I mean, there's an offset, you know, when workers' comp was established, which is they don't get sued and you pay into the workers' compensation system.
Counsel, I want to be careful here, because we are talking, you're representing a lot of claimants in Ohio, so you stand alone this morning. Do you believe the law as written by this court today is adequate?
Yes, I do.
I think Gross 2 was correctly decided because, you know, as you know, Justice Pfeiffer warned, there's a lot of poor decisions. Work rule violations occur every day. You know, and for you to say that, well, this is a violation and you're not going to get compensation, then, you know, it's going to lead to other things and them arguing different facts.
But, counsel, this was a different situation from Gross. That was a simultaneous violation and immediate injury. So there was a causal connection.
But here, there's other cases.
Let me finish. Here, you have an infraction that was discovered post-injury, was not causally connected at all to the injury. So what you're asking us to say is that if you're injured before the infraction is known and it's not causally related to the injury, there cannot be a voluntary abandonment.
That is correct.
That's different than Gross 2.
No, because Gross 2 talks about pre-injury conduct as well, not just contemporaneous.
Counsel, let me suggest to you that on the fact pattern you have, you may pick up more support from this bench than existed in Gross 2. So I'm having a hard time understanding why you want to make it more difficult to win your case, because you're also, and I'm unclear as to is any permanent, partial, total disability in play here, or is that going to flow to your client at the appropriate time without dispute?
That I don't know, sir. I'm just going to answer that question. I handle more of the litigation. I don't do the administrative process, so I don't know if he's actually entitled to that or not.
But right. But what we're talking about is temporary total, correct?
That is correct.
So it's not that the voluntary abandonment would totally wipe out compensation for your client.
But
so, I mean, that's the situation. We're not talking about you have no workers' comp that's available to you under these circumstances. What we're talking about is whether you should continue to be paid for lost wages in the future.
That is correct, and survive.
And the point here is that if the employer adequately looked at the work rule and said it was violated, you're fired, that's separate and apart from the workers' compensation situation.
Completely. And like I said earlier, you know, he got hurt, lost his job, and now he doesn't have any income. You know, and that is what temporary total is there for, which is to compensate them for their lost wages.
But it's related to the injury itself, and that idea of, it seems like you're arguing against yourself is what I'm saying.
No, you know.
Well, the lost his job.
That is correct.
It isn't really in play here, as Justice Lansinger is pointing out. This issue is, does he get temporary total? And that runs out when he's at maximum medical improvement, does it not?
So, that's correct.
And then he doesn't gain more from the system because his employer doesn't want him back.
That's correct. And especially, you know, in these smaller counties, sometimes, you know, one factory is the biggest employer and they pay the best and he'll never be able to supplement that. So he's lost his job and he's not getting the temporary total, because if this court would change the rule in Gross 2, and I believe the rule in Gross 2 should be the law of the state and should remain. One thing I did want to talk about is previously, in 2010 and 2011, I represented another injured worker. His name was Randy Heron, and the facts were pretty much the same. Got hurt, tested positive for marijuana. In that case, the commission had granted compensation to my client and said he did not abandon his position. The employer, Decorative Products, filed a mandamus action, and in that case, I have the brief of the Industrial Commission here, and it says, here the claimant engaged in behavior contrary to his employer's work policy against drug use. Under Louisiana Pacific, his behavior would foreclose compensation. First, the employer had a written rule prohibiting drug use. He must have been aware that he could be fired for the behavior. No one disputes that Heron was terminated while he was physically incapable of working. Under Ryder Stucco, the claimant remains entitled to temporary total. This is what the Industrial Commission said. They now have a different position in terms of this. And I think it's pretty obvious that they haven't explained their position. You know, they've pretty much have said the opposite thing in this case. And, you know, it's, if we could have an explanation from the commission as to why.
In your previous case, was there a connection between his drug use and the accident?
None whatsoever.
So it was similar to this. And there they agreed he gets.
Mm-hmm.
So should we get rid of the voluntary abandonment doctrine altogether? Is that what you're suggesting?
Not necessarily.
And it is confusing because we have cases on both sides of the issue, don't we?
Yes, yes. But until Gross 1, it had never been applied to post-injury cases. And I don't think it should. I think it should be, or it should only be applied to post-injury, not pre-injury.
Don't you think also you're here on a 10th District Court of Appeals case, don't you think that this court this time put all the concepts together? Because it looks like they're putting in Ohio welded blank as well. Am I saying that right? Yeah.
Yes.
And they're clarifying Gross, are they not? Ohio welded blank. And in this case, the 10th District clarifies both of them.
Yes.
You don't want anything changed.
I'm sorry, sir?
You don't want anything changed.
No. Stay the same.
Well, gotcha. Counsel, let's go back to the reference that you made about the Industrial Commission's brief. There, the test was Ryder Stucco, where you looked at, did this individual at the time of the positive drug test, did this individual have the capacity to voluntarily abandon his employment? So what if we limit Gross to its facts? Don't you still win under Ryder Stucco?
I believe so. Yes. Yes. Thank you very much. We would ask that you just affirm the Court of Appeals and grant compensation to my client.
Thank you
very much.
Counsel, you used your time. You may take a minute.
Thanks. Thank you, Your Honor. Just quickly, we're not advocating a bright line test. What we're advocating is that every case involving a pre-injury misconduct be decided by the facts and the facts weighed by the Industrial Commission.
Has voluntary abandonment been applied to pre-injury cases?
I would say the McCoy case, yes. The companion case to McCoy, the BrandGuard case, that would apply. In State X Rel Heisel, State X Rel Paysource, which are Court of Appeals decisions, also pre-injury conduct supported the voluntary abandonment defense. But my point is that the Industrial Commission weighs facts, and every time we raise a voluntary abandonment defense based on some misconduct, the injured worker complains that the termination is pretextual or retaliatory, and that's fine. But those factual disputes are decided by the Industrial Commission, not by this court. So, and we're not advocating, contrary to what counsel has indicated, we're not advocating that in every single case where this happens that TT be denied. No. What we're advocating is let the commission decide. And if some evidence supports their decision, then that ruling should hold.
Counsel, I guess you got me confused right at the end. Are you saying if the facts of this case are weighed by anybody, he does not get temporary total compensation for this injury? Is that what you're saying?
If the facts are weighed, like the Industrial Commission weighed them, and they determine that he voluntarily abandoned his employment,
right,
then no temporary total compensation is payable.
So the fact that he was severely injured by the negligence of someone else in the course and scope of his employment, he gets no compensation because the employer said, you violated our rules.
Well, because he intentionally violated the rules, and the only compensation that he'd be precluded is temporary total. Remember, it's temporary total compensation. And what he loses is the ability to go back to light duty. So what he loses by his own intentional...
Oh, you're losing me again. You're saying no on temporary total by these facts.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
So, counsel, if he doesn't have a recourse through the workers' comp system, he's abandoned it, he's no longer an employee. You're saying that at the time he was injured, he's not an employee that for the purposes of workers' comp, correct?
He's not an employee of my client, correct. So,
right. So does he have recourse then against the tortfeasors?
He did. He did pursue that, did pursue an action against them. But my point is that he's able to go back to work another job, and then his claim is not over. He's entitled to permanent partial disability. This voluntary abandonment only applies to temporary total, not permanent total, not a death case. My goodness, I don't know how a death case would have any relevance to this. I mean, if somebody dies, I mean.
Well, let me extend this argument now to an illogical extreme.
I'm ready.
If his violation of the no drugs policy meant that he was no longer an employee, but he had been injured because his employer improperly took shields off of a machine that he was working with. Now, you say he's not an employee because he's violated a rule.
Right.
His injury comes not from the drug use, but because of the intentional act of an employer to remove shields that are supposed to be in place. Mm-hmm. So he's then free to sue the employer on a negligence
he can
theory
pursue an
because he's not an employee. So he's not
intentional tort?
Not intentional tort. What's a tort at all?
Right.
Because he's not an employee.
The immunity would apply to where he was an employee at the time of the injury. So the employer would be immune from suit from negligence.
How can he be an employee at the time of the injury if he voluntarily abandoned it by his pre-injury behavior?
Because he wasn't terminated. I guess that's the...
Well, it's just a matter of paperwork at that point because, you know, it's kind of a strict liability policy or position. You do it, you're no longer an employee. I don't know how you can have it both ways, that you're not an employee that is going to benefit from the system of workers' compensation, but you are an employee that's going to preclude you from suing the tortfeasor here who happens to be your employer.
The only benefit, Chief Justice, that we contend that he's lost is temporary total compensation. The other benefits include medical benefits, et cetera, a permanent partial, potentially permanent total. Those are all payable. So we're only dealing
with... Why would those be payable?
Because they have no because the voluntary abandonment doctrine does not apply to permanent partial disability.
By statute?
I don't think there's any case. I don't think anybody's really challenged it.
Right.
Permanent total, some instances this court will find voluntary abandonment, not necessarily for a violation of a work rule. Those situations tend to arise when someone retires for reasons unrelated to their employment. But the point is that this is a temporary benefit. Once,
what about the payment of medical expenses?
It paid in this case. So remember, this claim was recognized. This claim was allowed. But the only benefit that was contested was temporary total compensation.
So your response to the Chief Justice, you don't mean that he did not, once there's a voluntary abandonment, he is no longer an employee. I think that's what I heard you say.
He no longer works. He no longer is an employee of our company. But he's entitled as an injured worker to the other benefits of the workers' compensation system.
So you're saying he's no longer an employee for the company, but he's an employee for workers' comp?
He was an employee at the time of the injury, is what I'm saying. He's eligible for workers' compensation payments. He forfeited his right to work for my company again. I guess that's to try to limit it. He's still entitled to the protections available to him under the workers' compensation law, including
except for loss of earnings.
temporary total compensation until such time that he goes back to work. If he goes back to work and this disability arises again, which causes him to be disabled, then notwithstanding that finding of voluntary abandonment, he will be entitled to temporary total compensation. That's this court's holding in State X. Rel. McCoy. So thank you for your time. I'd ask you to revisit this issue, not asking you to overturn Gross. Two, we're asking you to find that the facts of this case don't apply. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Thank you.